Welcome to Fellowship Talks, your weekly connection to the life and ministry of Fellowship Bible Church. It is our desire that this podcast will reinforce your worship on Sundays and encourage you as you live your life for Christ this week. Here are your hosts, Dan Schaefer and Amy Scrivanos.
Well, welcome to Fellowship Talks. This is a podcast made specifically for Fellowship Bible Church in Central Arkansas. We are one church in multiple locations. We have campuses in Cabot, Benton, soon to be Midtown. Actually, we just announced our official launch of Midtown. That's going to start in January. The West Little Rock campus and our Espanol campus. My name is Dan Schaefer, your host here for Fellowship Talks, and I'm sitting here, as always, with Amy Scrivanos.
Hey, everyone. So good to be with y'all today.
Amy, what an exciting day today.
It is.
We're actually recording on November 8th.
Your birthday.
I wasn't going to say that. It's more exciting than that. This episode, you're listening to on November 14th, but today we are in studio with Dustin Willis and his wife, Rainey Willis, and they are the authors of the book, The Simplest Way to Change the World. You may remember that this is the book that we used in our church when we walked through the Making Space series in August and September. And we've been looking forward to having them come speak here at our church and share a little bit more with us. I'm really excited, Amy.
Me too. I am.
Yeah. So if you have questions for us here at Fellowship Talks, feel free to email us at fellowshiptalks@fellowshiponline.com. And we'll answer your questions and get to hear more about what you're doing. But let's get right to it. All right. Dustin, welcome to Fellowship Talks.
Great to be on Fellowship Talks.
Rainey, welcome to Fellowship Talks.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, so good to have you guys. So you guys just landed in Little Rock. Mm-hmm. Ever been in Little Rock before?
Never.
I've been in Arkansas before, but never in Little Rock.
Where have you been in Arkansas have you been?
No, first time.
Oh, Crosschurch? Where is this?
Fayetteville.
Yeah,
like Crosschurch. Yes, like University of Arkansas.
Yeah, Fayetteville. Yes. Rogers area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did a thing. I did a thing at their church.
Yeah.
Probably 2 years ago.
Yeah. Well, so, welcome to The Rock.
Yes.
I like it.
I
feel like only insiders say that.
We don't say that.
Really?
No. No, I'm just kidding.
Really, it's just Dan. Really, it's just Dan. Oh, man. Well, you guys are a fun couple. Amy and I just met you about 10 minutes ago, but we can tell already that you have a lot of story to share and that you guys have a lot of fun around hospitality, not just writing a book. So...
Book is probably the least fun part of it all. The actual real stories that are in the book were a lot more fun than the pain of putting them on paper.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Awesome. Well, let's get started just hearing a little bit more about you guys. Why don't you tell us about your family? How long have you been married? Mm-hmm. Just what's life look like for you guys?
Yeah. So we've been married 15 years. We have two kids, a 9-year-old boy and an almost 7-year-old girl, Gremlin, we call her. I don't know if anybody remembers that movie.
Mm-hmm.
The cute
mm-hmm.
furry animal that turns into the monster.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We've got one.
With the light, right?
So yes. It was like water and uh-huh. food. Yeah, uh-huh. She's got her triggers.
You lovingly refer to her as Gremlin,
yes.
right?
Yeah. Lovingly.
That's good. That's good, yeah.
I can say that because she's not here.
No, she's awesome, though. She's like the charismatic leader of our family.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to, even though her brother's 3 years older, we're trying to let him know, look, you will work for her one day. So she runs
so
things.
So which one of you does she get this personality from?
Dustin. Yeah, it would be me. Yeah,
Rainey just pointed at Dustin.
Yeah, and our son is pretty much just like Rainey.
Uh-huh.
So.
Uh-huh.
So he'll actually organize and make the company happen, whatever company it is. Mm-hmm. But somehow she'll be the one up front talking about where they're going next.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah.
That's real good. Help our church get to know you a little bit more. What are some of your guys' interests? Like, we know from reading the back of the book that you've written a few books.
Mm-hmm.
And all seem to be focused around mission. Yeah. Help us to get to know you guys a little bit more.
Yeah, so we love mission, period. And I've historically worked in the church or most recently worked in a mission, one of the largest faith-based mission organizations in the country. And so it's always been a part of our professional life, but the amazing part of it is the real mission that takes place in our lives is not what I do professionally. It's what happens in our home. It's what happens in our own neighborhood. I'm entertaining the idea even now of stepping into the for-profit world. Not sure if that'll happen, but something that we've been looking into because we know that won't forfeit the mission that we have. And so even people that are listening that are, I work at an insurance company, I work for this engineering firm or whatever it may be. There's a part of me that as a professional minister for so long envy that opportunity. And so mission has always been a part of our lives. And in recent years, God has really transformed that for our neighborhood. And you mentioned our kids earlier. It's a mission for them as well. And they're the ones that look at us often and go, who's coming over tonight? And we're thinking, no one. Like, we had long days. Why would anybody come over? Like, we just want to sit at home and not talk to people. And they're like, Dad, 1 Thessalonians 2:8, our lives as well. Literally over our couch, the phrase, our lives as well, hangs. It just says our lives as well. And it's often that our kids remind us of that. So getting to know us, we're a very imperfect couple that love the mission of God because God's loved us so deeply, but we mess it up a lot too.
That's so good. It's funny how God uses our kids to preach back at us sometimes, isn't
right?
it? As we were reading through this series, my family was talking with my wife and I were talking with our kids about hospitality, and we asked them, what do you guys think hospitality is? And our six-year-old said, hospitality is when we invite people into our home and treat them like family.
Wow.
And I was beautiful. Like, that's really
very
cool.
Profound.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm gonna write that into my notes for tonight's talk. That's really good. I actually asked the question, what is hospitality? I think that's the better definition than I have written down over here.
Yeah.
Well, that goes out to Isaac, age 6. All right.
Way to go, Isaac.
So, well, how long have you guys been thinking about this concept of hospitality? When did God first put this on your hearts?
That's tough. I feel like it's looked different in every season. Like when we were newlyweds and lived in a one-bedroom apartment to now having a family and living on a cul-de-sac. I think it's just figuring out the season, what hospitality looks like in that season.
I think when we were pastoring in the church plant and the church was growing, a lot of our hospitality at that time, and the Bible says both, be hospitable to insiders and outsiders. And I think during that season, as we're trying to grow and mature this very young church, the hospitality at that time and that season for us was mostly with believers. Yeah. But pouring into them of, you need to open up your home, your dorm room, you need to open up your life, and really using that as an opportunity to teach them what it looked like. We had different people who lived with us during that season as a way of hospitality, and our house was 1,075 square feet. So when I say lived with us, it's like we're all right there. And even now that in our time in Atlanta, we've had somebody live with us throughout our time there. And so hospitality's shown itself in different ways, but I would say as far as being focused on our neighbors and focused on people who don't have the gospel, the last 6.5 years, God has just really brought that to fruition for both of us.
Yes. You mentioned a cul-de-sac and then like a 1,200 square foot house. What type of house or dwelling place is the best for hospitality?
Oh, any.
Anything.
Yeah. No, because, oh man, that's just the open door. Yeah, I mean, I can think of, he's not single anymore, but he used to be single, and he didn't know how to cook, bless his heart. He brought over, like, Ritz crackers.
It's our good friend Andrew.
Yes, Andrew, with, like, melted, you know, chocolate on it, and that was his gift. But he was like,
it was
really want to open my home, and so he would intentionally invite people over from the church to his bachelor pad, you know, with the ping pong table in the garage and the CrossFit stuff everywhere. But he would have families over because he saw what an impact it was having. And so, like, you know, you've got your bachelor with a dirty house and, you know, whatever.
He could not cook at all.
But he tried. He got all the best crock pot recipes he could find.
Yes. he would eat with us a lot just because we were kind of pouring our, and still are pouring. They're keeping our kids. He and his wife are keeping our kids right now so we can be here. But he would come to our house and there'd be he's like, this is a crock pot recipe that you did tonight. Tell me exactly how to do it so I can do that. So I think to answer your question,
great.
You said that really well. It really is just about an open door. It doesn't matter what the door looks like. Doesn't matter how big the house is. Now, I would say this. I've had people say this. I remember a guy by the name of Steve Von Fange who said when they built their house or when they bought their house, they wanted to design it in such a way that they could open it up and it be a hospitable home, and that they thought of other people when they built their home, not mm-hmm. themselves. So I think if it's a person that's listening that's, hey, we're getting ready to build a house, think about how you could actually build that house in mm-hmm. such a way that it would be inviting to other people. And if you have a house that's 1,000 square feet or an apartment that's 475 square feet, I think God's not concerned with the size or the look or the feel, but is the door open or not?
Mm-hmm. Tiny house?
Tiny right. house. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. There's a girl that worked with us. She's a writer for a long time, and her and her husband live in a tiny house. And really? I have seen them with 8 people eating in their house. And awesome. Like, wow. Their bed's up above them. And uh-huh. yes.
All right. Anything.
Wow. Yeah. Well, and that's the thing, too. Like, even that tiny house has there's space outside. There's space. If we just mm-hmm. get creative and, mm-hmm. you know, we can use what the Lord's given us, you know, or go mm-hmm. to a park and invite people to join you and be right. hospitable there. Yeah. So
that goes to one thing that you guys wrote in the book with putting the grill in the front yard. Mm-hmm. You guys really have a grill sitting in your front yard?
It doesn't live there.
It just
gets rolled out.
I would be fine with it staying there, so just for the fact of not having to roll it back and right. forth.
We get letters from the HOA on that one.
So we, when we first moved into the neighborhood that we're in now, we didn't know a lot of people, and we wanted some friends. We didn't know anybody in the area. And so we started rolling the grill out front, and it's amazing what some smoke coming off of a grill and the smell of meat can do to a neighborhood. So yes. We talked about our kids earlier. We made these very not great,
very handmade
flyers mm-hmm. inviting people to come eat.
Okay, I was wondering about that. Did yes. you just let the smell draw people in, or did you do any kind of prep before that?
It was kind of prepped before.
Okay.
So we made our best little, like, hey, we're going to do it on this date, bring whatever. And then me and my cute little kids went to every single door, and we knocked on every single door. Mm. And you can't really tell
and
them.
And how are they going
to
say no to
right?
y'all?
That was
well,
the,
I'm thinking
totally
you too.
Top.
Like, you're so cute. I'm like, you and your kids. I'm like, everybody's going to say yes.
Oh, well. There are still some people that don't answer their doors.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
There
yeah.
are people that, you know, you're like, why would you not want to come? Everybody's mm-hmm. out here, but mm-hmm. it's okay. You yeah. still keep asking.
And then occasionally
they show up.
We do mm-hmm. think there's a neighbor a couple houses over. I don't think they'll be listening to this podcast.
I don't think so either.
But we think they're in witness protection.
Totally. Mm-hmm.
Because they...
We didn't know they had kids until like 2 years after we lived there.
Because that's they just weird. Don't come out.
Yeah. You just mm-hmm. gave them up.
So yeah, we did.
We didn't use any names. We didn't use any names.
Yeah,
so we're not giving out your address.
Yes. But we've taken the cute boy that is our son and the cute girl that is our daughter and had them knock on the door and see if that makes a difference. And they have come.
They have come.
Mm. Yep.
So. All right. So one thing that our church has done since going through this series and reading through the mm-hmm. book is this block party idea. Mm. So our missions team purchased a bunch of block party items, giant movie screen, popcorn, snow cones, yard games, all kinds of things like that. Yeah. And we've encouraged D groups and then families to pull their neighborhoods together for block parties.
Yes.
And we've had a bunch of them happening already, and more will happen the rest of this year and into the spring. What would you guys say with that? Is a mark of success. If one of our small groups or D groups is doing this, or a family is doing this in their neighborhood, what is a mark of success that they can look at and say, yeah, we did a good job with this?
I would say the mark of success for me was when our neighbors asked, when are we doing that again?
Mm.
Like, it was like, mm-hmm. now they're all invested in it and they want to know when the next one is happening. It wasn't like we were expecting a whole lot in return. Actually, I don't think we're expecting anything in return. Mm. But that they're like, we enjoyed this enough that we want to do it again.
Yeah. And I think block party, you've got a number of families coming together to pull this off in their community. Is there another dinner that takes place that may be a little bit smaller?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
after that, they're, oh, yeah, hey, good. Yeah, we want to come to your house. And because I do think at the end of the day, the goal of hospitality is not just, hey, we ate together and it was fun. That's a great starting point. And mm-hmm. but how do you get to those intentional conversations where the gospel mm-hmm. comes forth? And that can happen sometimes in the big setting where there's a lot of people, but often it'll happen around the kitchen table where this idea of mission and community really do kind of collide. And so I think that that can be a measure of success too, is what does the next dinner look like? Is it smaller? Is it that family that you get to talk to? And I call it network evangelism because there's a neighbor a couple houses over from us that doesn't, he loves cars, knows everything about cars. I know nothing at all about a car. Like I've heard one comedian say it this way, like, I'm the guy that goes into the mechanic. I make noises to describe what's wrong with the car. And so that's my extent. So my neighbor a couple houses over has no respect for me whatsoever because I know nothing about cars. But my friend Clay knows all about cars. And he loves Jesus and cares about the truth of the gospel. And so I invite Clay to our cookout where my neighbor a couple houses over is going to be there. And they end up talking, and I feel left out because then they leave the party to go to the garage and look at cars. But Clay has had the opportunity to share the gospel with my neighbor numerous times. And so I think it's just getting people there and watching God network in the right ways because he's pretty good at that.
So no altar calls at the block party where people are getting saved and falling down, but bringing them into your home for a second meal. What an opportunity to get to know them at a more personal level.
Yeah, I think that's
great.
That is great.
That's real good.
No, we haven't had that happen yet. No, like, spontaneous baptisms or anything at the block party.
But if you're listening to this podcast and that's happened to you, let us know. I want to hear that story.
Yeah, you guys will be on the next episode.
You guys can write the next book.
In the book where you talked about just having those intentional conversations with people. And one of the things we all know is that when you're in relationship with people, sometime or another, there are hard things that come into their life and you have that opportunity to talk with them. What I really loved that you said in there is you were kind of coaching people on how to respond to those things. And you were saying, if you can put the phrase in front of it, I have good news for you, and that still is good news, then that's a good thing to say with them. So how do you kind of, what are some other things you would tell people as they're trying to learn how to be more intentional in that conversation?
I think everybody has a story of brokenness. It doesn't matter who you talk to. It doesn't matter old, young, married, not married. There's brokenness in everybody, and there's a story of brokenness. And so I think brokenness is a great place to start. There's a guy that I listened to early on and read a lot of his books early on in ministry and don't agree with everything theologically, but a guy named Donald Miller wrote a book a while back, long ago, called Blue Like Jazz. And again, we're not on the same page on everything theologically, but he just talked about how if you listen to people long enough and you ask enough questions, eventually they'll talk about their brokenness. And we serve a God who is a healer. So you listen long enough, you'll find their wounds. Take Jesus to their wounds, and he'll do what he does. And so I think listening, asking good questions, listening well, and waiting for the moment to people talk about brokenness, because we do have a good news that transcends all brokenness.
My D group went through this book together. We did a 6 weeks study through The Simplest Way to Change the World. And one of my D group members said, hey, when you're talking with the Willises, can you ask them one of these questions? All right. So I think this is a good place to ask the question. So Scott Bouchard, I know you're listening. Here's your question. He was asking about how people in the world are looking for community in a lot of different places, right? How does hospitality or biblical hospitality make the leap from sermon title or bumper sticker to an actual sustained movement, church movement? And he's talking big church, not just local church.
Man, great question.
Scott, you have stumped them.
Sorry, Scott, we don't have anything for you.
Really smart question.
We just went to Boston recently, and it was part of our, like, hey, we're celebrating our 15-year anniversary. And in Boston, we went to a very famous bar, restaurant, called Cheers. And depending on the age of the listener, they've either heard of it or they have not. For
Did
sure.
Did everybody know your name?
They didn't, but they should. But they should have.
They were jolly about it, though.
I almost spit my coffee out.
Sorry.
clearly I'm old enough to know.
But you think about the TV show Cheers. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of the watering hole, if you will, mm-hmm. for these folks. And they go there because they want to go somewhere, to quote you, where mm-hmm. everybody knows their name. Or you think about the TV show Friends, mm-hmm. so mm-hmm. popular for so long. What was that show ultimately about? It was this kind of interesting community of friends that leaned into one another. Mm-hmm. But I think when you look at the big church and how is this sustainable and what could this look like? Because, yeah, when you title something the simplest way to change the world, you better have some ideas to back that up. I think when we started a church a long time ago now, we looked at the numbers of people in our city that didn't know Christ. Mm. And as we thought about it, there within just I think it was a 3-mile radius, there were 100,000 people that we knew didn't have a relationship with Jesus based off the statistics and studies that had been shown to us. And we thought that's unattainable. We can't do a big enough event. We can't build a big enough building for 100,000 people to show up on a Sunday and hear me or somebody else on staff preach the gospel. That we just can't do that. So how is it practically possible? So ultimately, we pulled out a map. We had a guy, I think you couldn't do this then, but he pulled it off for us. I don't know if it was legal or illegal, so I'm not sure who's listening to this podcast, but this was before you could drop a pin into Google Maps, mm-hmm. but he worked with Google. And so he was able to go in and put all of our members in a map. And we printed that map out and we saw where everyone lived. And then we started circling areas of focus. And we said, these are the places we're going to practice biblical hospitality. Mm-hmm. Because you live right down the street from this person. You didn't even know that you did, but y'all live right near each other. And in y'all's vicinity, there's probably, 400 people who don't have the gospel. But there's two families there. That mm-hmm. starts to become attainable. And so if we just continue mm-hmm. to think big church and big buildings and big events, and we don't begin to break it down and make it small, I just don't think it's attainable. Mm-hmm. And people desire it. People want it. Mm-hmm. And so I think it makes it actually possible. So 100,000 people, we actually go, I think that's possible.
Mm. Mm-hmm. We did sort of the same thing, just even as a staff for our church in Central Arkansas. And what do we say? How many people unchurched are in Central Arkansas? What were we saying?
600,000?
I think we were saying 600,000 unchurched in Central Arkansas. Mm-hmm. And but that was too big a number. It mm-hmm. was like, how do we make a dent in that?
Right.
And so
it felt overwhelming.
So our teaching pastor started using the phrase one. Mm-hmm. Let's just go after one. Mm-hmm. Each one goes after one. Mm-hmm. And when we do that, when we go after, when we live our calling and our mission as believers, I think that's how we start a movement. Mm-hmm. Each one of us. Mm-hmm. That's good. That's good. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks, Scott, for that question. I wanted to ask you guys about what's your favorite part of this book? I know as an author, there has to be some part that was your favorite part to write. And as you're reading his work, which part was your favorite part?
All of it.
Oh, wow, yeah.
That's a really good answer.
She's awful PC today. Right.
It's very unusual. yeah. I think the part where the end goal of hospitality, when you think about the word hospitality, we get the same word hospital, hospice. Mm. I think that's... It is the real hope. The real hope in all of this is not just, oh, my house is open and I'm inviting neighbors in, or our backyard is open and we're doing stuff in the backyard with friends. I think the real hope is the gospel, and that is healing. God mm-hmm. heals a broken heart. He takes mm-hmm. what is old and he makes it new. He takes what is broken and he makes it a whole again. And he takes what has no purpose and gives eternal purpose. And so I think that's what I love about getting mm-hmm. to put this all together, is the end goal of all of this really is, you think about hospital, care, that word, mm-hmm. It's God healing people. Mm-hmm. And the fact that we can look at certain stories throughout our lives where we mm-hmm. see God doing that. And when I say God doing that, I can even think of our two best friends. Mm-hmm. And they're going through all kind of hell on earth kind of experiences. Mm-hmm. And they're not believers yet, but they've been coming into our home for 6.5 years now. Mm-hmm. We do vacations with these folks. Mm-hmm. And it's crazy. We've hosted a community group in our neighborhood, and they ended up hosting it for us in their home. Mm-hmm. But I see God beginning to peel back And I would say that as an encouragement to people too. We don't just tell success stories in this book. And I think that's part of my favorite thing too. We tell honest stories where there are people that we are still building with, and they don't have the gospel yet, but I know God's goal at the end of all of this, the end goal of hospitality, is care and healing for their soul.
That's really good.
I think that's my favorite part, is that they're not all great stories in that they're not there yet. Because too often you read the stories or you hear the people, you know, get up and preach the message, and you're like, oh, well, yeah, of course it all works out great. And everybody comes to Christ that you talk to.
15 people at my block party.
That's right. See, there you go. See, I haven't had a single person yet at a block party. So I love to be able to tell people that, because that's probably the reality for a lot of people.
Yeah, that was my favorite sentence in the book, where it said, you said, the end goal of hospitality is care and healing. We do the caring, and Jesus brings the healing. I starred that, I underlined it, I highlighted it, I boxed it, all that. That's my favorite part.
That's cool.
With that, I was wondering, can you share with us a little bit more how Kay is doing? Kay from your book, your neighbor that you would sit on the front, on her front porch, and she was hesitant about coming to church.
I'm trying to think who it is, because you probably changed the name.
I'm sure you changed the name.
I changed names of everybody that I didn't. Yeah. that's a practice.
Yeah. Here, I'll just refresh you in the book so you can remember the real name. That's Kay was on page 53, and this was one of the stories that hit our small group the most. One of the first people we invited was a friend named Kay. She'd had some bad experiences with the church, and yet somehow, despite those many barriers to Christ, she hesitantly accepted our offer to come to dinner. We have a saying in our church, when in doubt, be there. So during those early dinners with Kay, we learned just how important that phrase can be, because we had no idea what to say to a lot of the devastating things she shared with us. We had no neat and tidy answers, only food and relationship and confident assurances that Jesus loved her and we did too. And I'm skipping down a little bit, but it says, for 5 years now, we've continued our friendship with Kay, and over the years, we've seen God work in her life. In fact, just this morning, I was sitting on her porch, marveling at how far God has brought her from where she was when we first met. Although she's still resistant to the church, she now has a relationship with Jesus. She's embraced God's hospitality to her through Christ, and she prays fervently and speaks of the Trinity as if God is her consistent companion and not just antiquated figures in an old book.
See, that sounds amazing. That's really well written. It's much better written than my portions of the book.
The reason is that's
my good friend Brandon.
That's right. So that's a good opportunity to bring Brandon into this. Brandon is your co-author on the book, and I found the spot where he wrote and asked you about that. That's great. Sorry to put you on the spot.
No, I was like, okay, I know I changed some of the names, but I typically remember, because honestly, in the writing process, that's kind of a fun thing, is like, what are we going to call this person?
Yeah.
Just because you don't always want to dispel their story unless they're like, yeah, sure, tell.
Yeah.
But Brandon, send us an email here at Fellowship Talks and let us know how Kay is doing. Answer that question.
There you go.
All right. Amy, what questions do you have to ask him?
Well, I think the last thing that, you know, I just kind of had been thinking about was, you know, with your kids, how have you, I know you've modeled that for them. What are other things that you can do that to bring your kids on board with this idea of loving others well, caring for them? Because I have children. I know that, you know, it can be challenging sometimes. We have a lot going on, and
Amy has teenagers. I have kids all under 10. Mm-hmm. So what's that look like for all the age levels?
Yeah.
That's a great question. I can only speak to my age kids, and I have littles. Mm-hmm. So they're 7 and 9. And it thankfully has become a rhythm for them. So it's not something that they've kind of known without. Mm-hmm. So like, and I don't even know that we can take credit for it. It's just how maybe God has made them. But like Piper, we'll have kids playing in the cul-de-sac, and she'll go get a picnic blanket and bring out all the cheese sticks and the little go-gurts and just lay it all out for people. Mm-hmm. Like, that's nothing I've taught her. She's just picked up on, hey, I can help people.
You haven't taught her, but you don't stop her when she's doing it either.
No, I don't, because she's a gremlin, remember?
She's the at the El Jefe in our house. Yes, so don't get in her way.
That's right.
Well, what I hear in that, though, like you're saying, you didn't stop her. You didn't say, wait, we only have enough cheese sticks for your lunch the next couple of days. Yes. You're saying, take it. Yes. Share what we have.
Share what you have. Mm-hmm. And I think that is the hard piece for kids, because when you're having kids over, they're all up in their junk and nobody likes to share their toys. Mm-hmm. And then the house is a disaster. And I think it used to be a point of contention, but I think now they, when everybody, you know, walks out the front door and they've all gone home and it's just us and the mess, I think everybody takes a sigh of relief, like, oh, that was good. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not a, oh, the mess. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's filled everyone up. For Jack, I think he's the older one. I think he can just kind of take ownership and like,
when are we setting up?
Yeah.
When do I need to put the cornhole sets out in the front yard? When do when do you want me to
they
put the chairs?
They find their place in their job.
So it's been more just them coming alongside you. It's not so much been an intentional like, I need your help. It's more you're doing these things and they're wanting to jump in there and be a part of it. They're seeing that modeled. And
I think that works better too. Even when people that are you've invited, if you give them a job, I know that always makes me feel comfortable. When I go to somebody else's house and they give me a job, I'm like, oh, thank you. Mm-hmm. I need something to do. You know what I mean? So it's not like you're always doing the serving. I think it's inviting people along with you.
To come do life with you.
And yeah.
Yeah, that's really good.
Yeah, and I think with our kids too, is like you kind of mentioned this with the, you know, putting out the blank. It doesn't have to be perfect. Mm-hmm. You know, our son's not going to, he is not going to set up, no matter how many times he does it, the way that Rainey would want it to be set up. And neither am I, by the way, going to set it up the way that, that she would want it to be set up. But you just go with it and you let him do it and you let him own it. And so it has become, I will say it has, we had to calendar it. We had to put it on the calendar. We're going to do it on Wednesday night or Tuesday night or whatever it is. We had to calendar it for so long and until it became a rhythm and it's just who we are. And now we have to tell our kids no. Like, nope, tonight is actually the four of us.
Just us.
Do you find them inviting people over to your house without telling you guys?
Sometimes those kids just appear.
That's absolutely 100% true. There's like, who is that in the backyard? Why? Yeah. What? They've taken their liberties.
Well, we're going to have a great night with you guys tonight. If you're listening to this podcast, the night has already happened. Go back and listen to what they shared with us. I'm sure we will have a great night with you guys tonight as you present, but also as we have question and answers afterwards and some of our small group leaders have a chance to interact with you guys too. So guys, thanks for coming into Little Rock and being a part of what God's doing here and just sharing a little bit more with us. It's been fun to get to know you guys a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Honor to be a part.
And Amy, this is amazing stuff.
It really has been. I love just getting to hear from you after having read the book and just to hear your stories and hear how that's real in your life and not just words on a page.
Yeah, so. And my prayer is that our church will see this hospitality for what it is. Mm-hmm. We're trying to build avenues to a deeper relationship with people. So this is fun. This is a good time. Mm-hmm. Until next time, Fellowship, I'm Dan.
And I'm Amy.
For As You Go, this is Fellowship Talks.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Fellowship Talks. We hope this podcast will help you be a more effective disciple of Jesus Christ as you love God and you love others in your daily context. Fellowship Bible Church exists to make disciples who live by God's grace and for His glory at home and across the world.